Now it's time for Inspirational Women and my guest, Dr. Shelby Harris, a licensed clinical psychologist and director of sleep health at Sleepopolis. Sleep is absolutely critical to our good health, and Dr. Harris provides us with some of these insights. Dr. Shelby Harris, good morning. Thank you so greatly for being with us today.
Oh, good morning. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, I am grateful because I have to tell you right off the bat, I'm someone who in the past felt, oh, I didn't need a lot of sleep. And honestly, there'd be nights I was just sleeping 4 hours. And I thought that was needing to be the norm. That has certainly changed. And I find I need my sleep. But maybe that's the thing to address is how critical sleep is to our lives.
I mean, I always say that people will talk about the pillars of health. They'll talk about things like diet and exercise, but I always say, like, sleep is the bedrock. It's really the thing with which everything else is built upon. So it's really important for mood, for memory, for our bodies, for muscle growth, for development, for kids through older adults. It really impacts so many areas of our lives, from physical to mental health.
Okay, the bedrock. But then we might have restless sleep. So how do we address that? What do we need to do?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of reasons why someone could have restless sleep. So the first thing I always think about is ruling out any sort of a medical issue. So what we often see actually really commonly, but people don't always get diagnosed for it, is something called sleep apnea. So some people might have some snoring, even if it's women, it gets misdiagnosed because it doesn't have to be super loud snoring. You'd be snoring with some pauses in your breathing and feeling tired during the day, and that can actually disrupt your sleep enough that it causes you to be really restless. For other people, it could be your environment. It could be a warm room. It could be noise, bed partner that's moving a lot that might actually make you have more restless sleep. For some people, it could be things like pain or even menopause symptoms, hormonal issues, pregnancy. There's a lot of reasons. And then finally, there's anxiety. So there's a lot of reasons we try to pinpoint as to why it's happening. And then we might start to do treatments to help kind of solidify the sleep, whether it's addressing any hormonal issues or apnea or doing treatments directly at the sleep, like cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia, which is a really common treatment.
And I saw that that is a specialty that you have in dealing with anxiety and depression. So you obviously are seeing a connection between lack of sleep or poor sleep and perhaps then having anxiety and depression.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So they feed on each other. So what I will often hear from, because I mean, I'm a psychologist by training with a specialty in behavioral sleep medicine. So what I hear a lot of times are things like, you know, when I'm feeling really anxious, that's when I don't sleep well. But then when you're not sleeping well, your kind of reserves to be able to deal with stress make it even harder to be able to deal with the anxiety around you. So it's targeting the anxiety, but also targeting with sleep-related interventions to help someone sleep better, because then it actually might help them manage their anxiety better. Same for depression.
And how insightful that is, because we might just focus on one area, but it seems like we need to be aware of a two-pronged approach potentially.
Oh, yes, 100%. So one of the more common ways that was always taught for years and years in medical school and psychiatric training was that insomnia was oftentimes something that was secondary to another issue. So insomnia is secondary to anxiety or depression or medical issues. And what we find through the past 15 or so years in research is that the insomnia becomes its own issue, even if in anxiety, let's say, started it. So you really do need to approach them both separately. And sometimes I'd argue starting with just treating your sleep might actually help the other issue even more.
Oh, that is so excellent. And just such an important awareness to have.
Yeah. It's something that a lot of people still kind of subscribe to the older view of treat the other thing first, but we really try to treat the insomnia first for most people.
So to help us have a good sleep experience, do you, because here you are as we'll call you the sleep specialist, do you have a recommendation as to good routines to have preparing for sleep and even when we get up in the morning?
Yeah, it's funny. People are always very interested in what I do for bedtime. And it's just nothing fancy. It's like I tell people, find something that works for you at bedtime that you enjoy, that's quiet, calm, and relaxing, that you can do ideally without a screen. That's the best, because we don't want to have you like kind of stall going to bed or getting revved up watching something or on your phone or something. I recommend is like a good half hour. Ideally, you can even do an hour, but before bed, to find something you can do that's quiet, calm, and relaxing in dim light without screens. And then once you're sleepy, get in bed. So you can do it for a little while, like reading or something in bed, but try not to spend too much time in bed. Really get in bed when you're sleepy. And then in the morning, the key is light. So get up. I also find that sleep can be very dehydrating for many people. So get up. I always have a glass of water next to my bed. I drink a big glass of water, and then I get as much light as possible. I open up all my shades. Sometimes I'll work out in the morning, and that can be really useful to help kind of with the alerting aspect.
Oh, excellent. Now, if we've not had a particularly good night's sleep, what about mm-hmm. taking a nap? Is that a good idea?
It can be. If you routinely have insomnia, we actually say try not to nap for most people. We do make some exceptions. But if you're someone who's generally an okay sleeper, or you were out late, or you did have a bad night, a nap of 20 to 30 minutes before, about 8 hours before you go to bed. So if you go to bed at 10, try to stop it by about 2 p.m. That's usually totally fine. But it, like I said, if you notice that it impacts your nighttime sleep, stop the napping.
Okay. And there should be perhaps a limit on the amount of time that you would take for a nap.
Yeah. 20 minutes is kind of the sweet spot. But I usually tell people set a timer for 30 minutes because it takes a few minutes to fall asleep. That is enough to be refreshing, but not make you wake up groggy, because if you take a longer nap, you can actually wake up more groggy. And then the longer naps tend to impact the nighttime sleep. So that short and sweet kind of one is nice, and it's the ideal.
Okay, so that may be something we do once in a great while, but really yes. The focus should be to have a good night's sleep. And, you know, we hear about 8 hours. Is that really kind of the optimum?
It isn't, believe it or not. So a lot of people just say 8 hours because between 7 to 9 is the average for most people, most Americans. So the 8 is just in the middle. That's it. So it's... For the majority of people, some people need 7, some people need 9. And believe it or not, there are some outliers where some people need 6, 6.5 to feel fine and well-rested and refreshed. And they don't, even when they try to sleep more, they can't, and they're happy with how much sleep they're getting. So you might be a little less. But for the vast majority of people, it's somewhere between 7 to 9. 8 is just a myth. It's not for everyone.
And is it good to have a regular time that we do go to bed each night so we... Perhaps our body really adjusts well to that.
Yeah, so consistency is really king for many people. That's why things like travel and jet lag can throw it off, because it throws off our body clock. So when you're home, really try to keep about the same bedtime wake time. Now, that being said, if you don't routinely have insomnia, you can have a little bit of leeway with it. I don't want people also, there's a fine line, because I don't want people being super, super rigid with their sleep, because that's not ideal either. So within about an hour of bedtime and wake time, if you're a good sleeper generally, it's totally okay. But more than that, if you sleep in an extra 2 to 3 hours on the weekend, that actually can make things worse. So try to keep it as consistent as possible, 7 days a week.
Oh, yes, so don't distinguish between days off and even vacations. Try to keep the same,
yeah.
Right?
Ideally. I mean, I will tell people, you know, if you sleep in a little on vacation, you go out a lot, like sometimes I go on vacation, I'm out a lot later. I might have that glass of alcohol or wine or something if I'm traveling a little later than usual. It's okay. It's just make it the exception, not the norm. You know, vacations are a time sometimes to enjoy, but if you just want to minimize the disturbance to your sleep, if you're there for a conference or something, or you just want to be on your game, then really try to keep as consistent as possible.
And when we think in terms of the consistency, what about daylight savings time? There's been a lot of talk and wanting to standardize. What's your take on that?
I agree with the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, which is the kind of the biggest body of sleep medicine physicians and doctors around. And we all agree that daylight saving is one of the worst things for our body, because not even are you losing an hour of sleep, but our bodies are now set to a clock that is not actually lined up with our internal body clock. So what we really, light in the morning is really important. And when you get to the winter, those like that really dead of winter time for a lot of people, the sun's not coming out for many hours. We don't, kids are going to be at the bus stop for hours in the morning without sun. and the teenagers are going to really suffer from it. So I know it's lovely to have extra light in the evenings during the summer, but it really is not how our bodies are meant to work. So we'd much rather prefer that we stay in standard time year round, don't change anymore.
And does it feel like that's where we're going? It seems to still be such an even split, maybe?
It's interesting. I think that there is a lot of people who want to stop changing the clock. I think that that's a universal feeling for many people. But there's a lot of people who still think that it should be in daylight saving time year round. And because that would give you, in their mind, more light in the evening, and it's better for business, it's better for transportation. But like I said, the reality is it's just not lined up with our bodies. So, I think people don't want to change, but they're kind of not understanding the science behind why we should stay in standard time.
That's right. So we need to keep touting that line is to stay with standard time, which is natural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right. And we adjust to it. The body adjusts. And then...
Yep.
It would probably, would you say, I mean, this is speculating, but I mean, in general, would we have better harmony, kind of better attitudes with people if we weren't doing this back and forth twice a year?
I think it might. it would be a good thing, yeah.
Yeah, it would be a good thing to really test and see how that works, right?
Exactly.
Right. So, we can only cover so much in such a short period of time. I want to really point toward where you do such a great service with some special podcasts that you do with Sleep Talking, which sounds, I mean, that's a clever title for it. So tell us a little bit about that, Dr. Harris.
So on the podcast that I do along with Sleepopolis, it's a lovely opportunity to really kind of dive into various topics in sleep and just health and wellness overall that I really feel passionate about. So we'll talk about every week or every 2 weeks it comes out, and we'll talk about things like new moms and sleep, postpartum sleep for a lot of people, how to support parents during that time. We'll talk about things like jet lag, shift work, sleep apnea. And I talk with doctors, I talk with patients, all different people to get all different perspectives. And it's a really lovely platform to really learn more about a specific topic in about 30 minutes.
And that's why I think it's so important to mention because, we're just touching on the things that are so critical about sleep, how fundamental it is, and we can't cover that. But you do.
Yeah, I try to. Very much try to.
And podcasts are really so wonderful these days that we can use our time so well, doing housework, say, and still be learning something because we have the podcast on.
I absolutely love them. Yep. And even in the shower, I just love to listen whenever I can to any podcast. Learn all the time.
Yes, absolutely. So sleep definitely is one of those things we, just don't spend time learning about. It's kind of we live into it and it becomes some whatever habit it is, but there's really so much more science about it and you're really making us so much more aware of it. And that to learn and not to cause any stress or anxiety because that's counterproductive.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I really try to talk about it in a way that's not shaming, that makes people feel like there's hope. And to learn a lot about what they might be able to do. Because they're really, even think about it for like medical school and psychiatric school and psychology school, they still don't train that much on sleep. So it's really important to get the word out there from qualified clinicians so they can really learn what they can do to help their problems or who they can see.
Absolutely. And, just a quick thing with moms and thinking about having a newborn and crazy cycles. Obviously, moms just need to know that they're probably going to be sleep deprived.
It kind of comes with it. But I think the thing that needs to be spoken about more, which I have talked about on the podcast, actually in the most recent episode, is really about support. Right. So trying to protect for moms who have a history of before they were pregnant, history of depression, they're at a higher risk of postpartum depression if they're getting less sleep at night. So to really try and protect 4 to 6 hours of sleep for the mom, figuring out ways to get people to help, to have help in the house, if possible, have community help, to do things to support the mom as opposed to just saying it's all on you. So that's really what we're trying to discuss more and more.
And that's an important insight, too, to realize we shouldn't feel like we have to be super mom, super woman to do this on our own, to, again, understand the realities of what's going on.
100%. It's super important to really. And the thing that I always stress is, like, think about these things before the baby comes. Right. A lot of times they're always talking about baby sleep. Let's talk about mom sleep before the baby comes. And let's try and figure out how we can get a partner, if possible, to help out, family, whatever we can do to really help protect a few hours of uninterrupted sleep for the mom.
Yes, absolutely. And then a quick thing about deep sleep versus light sleep versus dreams, REM sleep, all of that. Does it factor in as well?
Factor in to what specifically?
Well, to have a restful sleep. Do we have to have a lot of deep sleep?
Yeah. So people, just quote unquote normal, healthy sleeper will cycle through various sleep stages throughout the night 4 to 7 times. So a normal, healthy sleeper will have awakening, then they'll go into a very light in and out sleep that's called stage 1, then they'll have this kind of middle level sleep at stage 2, and then deep sleep stage 3, and then cycle into REM sleep. Now, deep sleep is really important for your body repairing itself, and REM sleep is where the brain really does a lot of this repairing. And you can dream at any stage, but you dream the most in REM, and that's when your brain is really like a filing cabinet trying to help with memories and process emotions. And so you need a percentage of all those different stages throughout the night. You just cycle throughout them. So it's not that one stage. People always say, like, I need more deep sleep. It's not that you're supposed to get just one stage throughout the night. It's about cycling in the right percentages throughout the night.
Great. Well, we're realizing how critically important it is with so much information. So again, we want to direct people toward your podcast because they can really get more in depth and really a lot more information about sleep.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, you can go at sleepopolis.com and you can find Sleep Talking with Dr. Shelby there. You can find it on anywhere that you get your podcast. It's pretty widely available.
Well, I appreciate you. Thank you for your time today and your really important insights. I appreciate your great work, Dr. Harris.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.